What is... Dax, are you...
Tracking all our cars on Carvana Value Tracker? On all our devices? Yes, Kristen, yes I am.
Well, I've been looking for my phone for...
In Dax's domain, we see all. So we always know what our cars are worth.
All of them?
All of them. Value surge! Trucks up 3.9%!
That's a great offer.
I know. Sell?
Sell.
Track your car's value with Carvana Value Tracker today.
Whether you want to
buy, buy, buy.
In a bear market or
sell, sell, sell
in a bull market, Jim Cramer can help you become a better investor. Mad Money, weeknights 6 Eastern. Listen to CNBC on the Odyssey app.
Oh, yeah. On your home for the best Ravens coverage.
What time is this?
It's time for News from the Nest with Vinny and Haney. 1057 The Fan.
1057 The Fan here on this Turn It Up Tuesday. It's News from the Nest. Bob Haney, Vinny Serrato, Nolan McGraw. The referee for Sunday night's game, Ravens and Buffalo, is Carl Sheppers. Huh. I'm looking here at Ravens Wire, as a matter of fact. Sorry, I got untracked here. All right. Sheppers, stickler for penalty calls. Over his 25-year career, Sheppers averaged 10-plus penalties per game. Sheppers has thrown 164 total flags, 73 of which were on the home team. 91 on the road team.
Ooh.
Happens to be the Ravens. Carl Sheppers. The home team has won nearly 73% of the games he has officiated this season. Roughly 10 total flags per game for a total of 1,284 yards. Ravens, one of the most penalized teams, as Vinny just mentioned, in the NFL. During the matchup against the Chargers, Sheppers called 12 penalties against the Ravens. All right, there's our ready to rock and roll, let's blast the referee excuse. And by the way, I have zero problems yelling at them because, yes, they do, in fact, impact the outcome of a game.
As long as it's not like the Green Bay game and Philly game was ridiculous, all the penalties. I mean, you want to screw up your product? Have them call 9 million penalties because... You know, people get frustrated with that, flip the channels and everything else. It's not a good watch.
Oh, I was watching Oregon and Penn State second half of the Green Bay game because it got to the point also, unfortunately, for the Packers. Is like, that is a penalty flag or is that a Packer laying on the field? Because there are a lot of both. Yeah. But, yeah, the flow was interrupted by the laundry, for
sure. Well, this time last week, we were talking a lot about the crew for the Ravens-Steelers game
holding.
And how much offensive holding on the line and... The game ends up playing out. Steelers had more penalties than the Ravens, but still not a lot overall. Ended up being kind of a clean game.
Something tells me I'm going to be really upset with Carl Sheppers starting at 6:30.
I just hope that they kind of say, you know, let the teams decide who wins these games, not the stripes.
The old saying, nobody's paying to watch you.
Right.
We're not buying a ticket to watch the umpires or the referees. Screw the game up. Anyway, let's get back to John Harbaugh. Met with the media yesterday and was asked about Zay Flowers. How's that knee looking?
Yeah, that's in we'll-see mode. He's working hard to get back, and we'll see toward the end of the week if he's practicing. And he could play without practicing for sure if he feels healthy enough and if it's safe for him.
I would say listen to that, Bob. We'll see at the end of the week if he's practicing. So he's not going to be practicing at the beginning of the week. I'm kind of with you. I think it's a long shot. Although, he only had one catch for 10 yards last time they played Buffalo.
Punt return situation for the Ravens. The returner.
Mm-hmm.
We've seen some shaky performances here. And various different dudes, not just one player. It's kind of been a season-long issue. So, John Harbaugh, what are we looking at here ahead of Buffalo?
Steven is a guy that we also have confidence in. And, you know, I know he had, you know, a couple balls got on the ground last week. It was windy, lefty. He was bombing the ball for sure. And on the very first one, you know, just, I don't know if he lost track of where he was at, but we don't want to be backing up inside the 8-yard line and catching those kind of punts. Give it a chance to go in the end zone, right? And so he'd like to have that one back. And then he decided to not field two of the other ones and turned out okay for us the way they bounced. So, but he's done well. He's an experienced guy, and he'll do well back there too. So we're confident. Or if Tylan was back there, we'd be confident with Tylan too. Well, those guys all do a good job.
Now, the reason Tylan's not doing it anymore because he put the ball on the ground and he let punts roll. So that's the same thing. And Sims, that could have been catastrophic, that first one, where he catches it on the, or flubs it on about the four, and then it rolls back to like the two or whatever, and he picks it up. I mean, I don't. Maybe the rule now is you put your heels on the eight. It always used to be put your heels on the 10. Put your heels on the 10-yard line, and if you got to back up, let it go. Do not move. Come forward or whatever. Get the hell out of the way. But don't catch. And you see it all the time now, these guys catching on the 3-yard line. What the? Come on.
Steven Sims is who Harbs is talking about there.
His best thing he did was a jet sweep.
And John Harbaugh did say Deontay Hardy, Baltimore, doesn't know whether he'll be ready for Sunday, and he hasn't played since October.
He ain't playing. You're not putting a guy in who hadn't played a long time in his first time in Buffalo.
What a season, by the way. Didn't show up for training camp. Was pretty much missing in action all that time. Threw out a pitch at an Orioles game. First pitch, that's about it. That's his highlight.
His guy was what? He made all-pros, a rookie with New Orleans from Baltimore. Went to Assumption College. Is that? I guess I'm assuming he went to Assumption. Anyway, it's news from the Nash. John Harbaugh was asked about the offensive line and how it has grown as a unit over the season.
The offensive line, just like every position, but there's a lot of individual stories in there. The five individual starters, and then there's others too that in the depth part of it. And if you get into that room, you kind of see that each guy's got his own story, but probably as a whole, it's probably just steady improvement, you know. They've been through a lot. You know, you look back at the Joe D situation, and then, you know, the fact that it was three new guys and all that kind of stuff, and, you know, some of the doubts and all that kind of stuff that they dealt with. I really feel good and proud of them, but really, we don't think about it too much right now, Brian. It's just more about preparing for this game and the challenge that this defense presents our line, just like every position.
Who would have thought that they'd be where they're sitting right now with that offensive line, you know, prior to training camp, where Harb said, you know, I want to know after two weeks into camp, we're going to have our starting five. And at that time, and Bob, I remember him saying, you know, Voorhees has pretty much solidified himself at the left guard spot. You know, Falele was playing a lot of right tackle.
Very questionable at both spots.
Yep, and then Harbs is the one that wanted to move him to guard. I know that. And I remember one of the coaches telling me, I says, what do you think of Falele at guard? Said, after about two plays, he's exhausted. You know, so he needed to get into shape. Then you got, you know, you ask the people there, well, what about Rosengarten? Well, you know what, probably by middle to late part, he's a talented kid, but maybe by the end of the year he'll be good. So I mean, there was so many question marks. And then McCary, what was the big thing about McCary? He's too valuable to start.
Yeah, flexible dude.
Yes. So I mean, then you put those, then Voorhees gets hurt, and then McCary's got to come in, and then it's been those five ever since.
It's Vinny and Haney, 105.7 The Fan. Vinny's going to compare the Pittsburgh and Buffalo defensive lines going up against that O-line for the Ravens. Coming up at 12:45, bottom of the hour, Jacob Calvin-Meyer, talk Orioles with him from the Baltimore Sun. But when we come back, we're going to turn up the money, hopefully, with Buy or Sell, and talk about the many sports subjects of this day. It's Vinny and Annie, Bob Annie, Vinny Serrato, Nolan McGraw here on the Fan.
So it's a new year, 2025, and you're thinking, how am I going to make this year different? How am I going to build something for myself? But where do I start? Shopify is how you're going to make it happen, and here's how. Shopify makes it simple to create your brand, open for business, and get your first sale. The best time to start your new business is right now. Get your store up and running easily with thousands of customizable templates, no coding or design skills required. All you need to do is drag and drop. Their powerful social media tools let you connect all your channels and create shoppable posts and help you sell everywhere people scroll. What happens if you don't act now? Will you regret it? What if someone beats you to the idea? Don't kick yourself when you hear this again in a year because you didn't do anything now. With Shopify, your first sale is closer than you think. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to start selling with Shopify today. Shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed's sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Okay.
Are you buying?
Great cash, homie.
Or are you selling?
I'm not going to buy into that crap.
Penny and Haney, 1057, The Fan.
Pete Haney, 1057, The Fan, here on this Turn It Up Tuesday. Oh, so much to get to in the world of sports. You got the NFL playoffs, Ravens still alive, hopefully advancing beyond Buffalo. You got Maryland winning last night against Minnesota, off to Northwestern. You got the NBA hot and heavy. You got all sorts of things going on with college football. Could Deion Sanders be leaving Colorado for Big D in Dallas? That intrigue part of the equation. And things I'm not even thinking about right now. You know, like pitchers and catchers in about 5 weeks. But right now, most importantly, count some dough. Not by yourself.
Yeah, the market's pretty flat right now. The Dow's down 35. The S&P's down 16. NASDAQ is down 74. DraftKings up 55 cents. Under Armour's down 9 cents.
All right, we'll get started in baseball today, where Roky Sasaki, everyone's waiting to see where he's going to sign, has until January 23rd to do so, but a lot of the scuttlebutt this week is that a deal is going to get done here in a matter of just a couple days. The pool of interested teams, or the teams that are seriously in on him, has shrunk. The Yankees were informed that he will not be choosing them. The Giants also reportedly out as well, leaving kind of a smaller group here. But you got the Dodgers, the Padres, Cubs, Blue Jays, and Rangers. That's the last that I saw. Might even be a smaller group by this point. But all along, it seemed like L.A. was the destination for many reasons. Money, World Series contender, already an established Japanese portion of their fan base. But buy or sell, Bob, if Sasaki ends up anywhere but the Dodgers, it would be stunning.
Not necessarily. I'm going to sell it. And MLB Network's been reporting all morning that the final three are L.A., San Diego, and Toronto. Mm-hmm. So everyone else didn't make the cut. The Orioles actually had, because he's an international free agent, and we'll talk to Jacob Calvin-Meyer about this in a couple of minutes. Orioles have a ton of dough. I don't know if he has a preference to pitch on the West Coast, because Toronto's in Canada on the east side of it. I don't know, but if he goes to the Padres, Nolan, I'm not going to be like super stunned. So I'm selling it. It would be a stunning turn of events. Now, if he signed with the Tigers, blows our socks off out of nowhere.
Has Toronto been in the final three for every
they
big free agent?
They signed Hoffman because he couldn't pass the Orioles physical. The Another rejects. Thing we're going to talk about with Jacob Calvin.
Braves rejected him, too. I saw that. It wasn't just the O's.
He got Mutombo'd, huh? Jeff Hoffman.
So don't blame the O's. It wasn't just them.
I'm not losing any sleep over this one, trust me.
All right, moving on here. Jordan Love earned a lot of praise for what he accomplished in his first full season as a starter last year. Had the playoff appearance, that probably would have been good enough for the fans, but even more confidence started to grow when Green Bay took down the Cowboys on the road and almost took down the 49ers as well. He cashed in, turned that into a new four-year contract extension, made him one of the highest paid at his position at the time. Now you fast forward a year, and they went quietly against Philly, a game where Jordan Love did not play well at all, three interceptions for him. Buy or sell, Vinny, last year's playoff run, a case of fool's gold for Jordan Love.
Now, I'll sell that. I mean, he had three of his starting receivers were all out. Running back went out. So, and he came back off of, what, a nerve
O-line
thing?
O-line was dreadful.
Yeah, O-line was bad. Defense was outstanding. So, no, I think he'll be fine next year.
Back to baseball. Still not a lot being reported about Anthony Santander's free agent market, but maybe the only nugget we've gotten here recently is that he's open to a more short-term deal for higher annual value. Ken Rosenthal was the one to report that. Both Santander and Jack Flaherty, for that matter, are open to the shorter-term deals. And it's starting to seem that the league has concerns with Santander's profile, an aging corner outfielder, designated hitter hybrid. Around here, everyone was reading that Tyler O'Neill addition as a clear sign that the team has moved on from Santander. But if the price keeps dropping or the length of the contract, who knows what happens? Buy or sell, Bob, a short-term deal to bring Santander back to Baltimore would be a win-win for both sides.
I like Tony Taters. Let me stress that. And there's one guy with two thumbs who said they could have signed him for 3 years, $60 million back in February. Then he hits 44 homers, makes the All-Star team, drives in over 100 runs. I'm guessing he might be lucky to get 3 years at $60 million right now. I'm going to answer your question with a question. Where's he playing? Where's room at the... You picked up O'Hearn's option, so there's your left-handed right fielder sort of hybrid. You brought in O'Neill, who spends a lot of time on the IL. Mullins isn't going anywhere. Moonman just finished second most valuable player. Mateo, who's haggling in arbitration, could be an outfielder guy. Right-handed stick. My question is, where does he fit in? In theory, I wouldn't mind it, but where?
I'd put him back in right field.
Okay.
I'd use that to trade Heston Kerstad.
Okay.
Get rid of that logjam.
I forgot about him. Is that a good thing?
And the O'Neill stuff. I mean, look, you could get a good platoon.
He was on the IL, I think, three times last year.
Right. And he gives you the right-handed bat that you were looking for.
Right. And his gold gloves are about 5 years in the rearview mirror, too, by the way.
Right. Well, as long as he's capable, I wouldn't mind seeing him split time as a platoon guy.
All right, I'll buy it then. Yeah. You're talking me into it. But somebody's got to go.
That was easy.
Yeah, thank you.
All right, back to the NFL, where the Cowboys waited a little bit longer than the rest of the pack to enter the coaching search. But apparently, one prominent name could have been in the cards. I'm not talking about Dion here. Jordan Schultz said yesterday, reporting, that Dallas was interested in the idea of adding Bill Belichick. And there were behind-the-scenes conversations about it. But Belichick came away from that with the idea that the job was never going to be available to begin with. I guess he was under the impression that McCarthy would be hanging around. Jordan Schultz goes on to note that there is a strong relationship between Belichick and the Jones family. But Vinny, are you buying or selling that a Cowboys-Belichick marriage would have actually worked out?
I'll sell it. I think it would be kind of like Parcells going there. You know, that's the thing. I don't think both want to be in charge. That's the problem.
Stephen A. Smith actually has Bill Belichick as number one on Dallas's wish list. I don't know if he's got any inside information that backs up those assertions.
The Stephen A. list?
Yes. Yes.
The A. list.
Yes, and a big Cowboy fan, if I'm not mistaken.
The only list that matters.
Vinny and Haney, 105.7 The Fan. When we come back, we'll talk Orioles' Jacob Calvin-Meyer from the Baltimore Sun. Vinny's going to break down the Steelers' defensive line versus Buffalo's and how that might be advantage Baltimore coming up on Sunday. NFL Lunch here from Sean McDermott and Josh Allen. And then Brian DiArdo at 1:30, CBSSports.com. Preview the divisional round with him. Oh, yes, we'll get to our playoff picks and at least what happened last night. I think a couple of us picked the Rams, if I'm not mistaken. It's Sarasota here to talk about what's going on in the warehouse. And there's some news for sure from the Baltimore Sun. He's on the Window Nation guest hotline. Let's welcome back to the program Jacob Calvin-Meyer. Jacob, happy new year, belated, and thanks for joining us as always.
Thanks, guys. Thanks for having me on.
All right. Jeff Hoffman declined in regards to health. Andrew Kittredge comes in, one-year deal with an option for next year. So, first of all, Kittredge introduced yesterday, coming back from Tommy John, pitched very well for the Cardinals. Splits were a little dopey, though, against lefties based on his career numbers anyway. And what exactly happened with Jeff Hoffman, who appears to be the only guy that wants that Blue Jays money they're trying to give away to anybody right now?
Yeah, the Hoffman news was definitely interesting and surprising. that's not something that report from Robert Murray over at FanSided, and he does a great job. It wasn't confirmed or corroborated by anybody else. It doesn't mean, of course, that it's not true. In fact, it became more likely that it was true once an Atlanta Braves reporter came out and said that they almost had a deal with Hoffman that was nixed by a physical. And so, you know, two things can be true at the same time. The Orioles were willing to give a pitcher a multi-year contract. It being Jeff Hoffman is, you know, would be somewhat surprising, given he is traditionally a reliever, even though there were, you know, were talks that he might, you know, be a swing man or a starter moving forward. So that can be true, but it can also be true that when you see something in a shoulder that you don't like of a player that you're about to give $40 million, then it's probably prudent to maybe not give that money. And the fact that the contract he ended up signing was for $7 million less than what he had originally agreed to with the Orioles goes to show that, you know, probably the Blue Jays saw the same thing in the physical, and given how desperate that they've been this offseason, they were willing to give Hoffman $33 million. And you mentioned Kittredge. I think that was a really, really smart signing, because when you get rid of Jacob Webb, it made the bullpen, the heart of the bullpen, a little bit more murky. And I think Kittredge is a really good fill-in for that. You know, you mentioned the injury. He was, you know, but he actually has been one of the more underrated relievers in baseball at just, you know, pure effectiveness. And the splits that you mentioned last year are not something that was reflected for most of his career. And so I think it was a really smart signing to get a reliever to bolster the bullpen.
Now, Jacob, with the bullpen and the additions here and Charlie Morton signing a week plus ago to the rotation, are the Orioles done fortifying the pitching staff heading into spring training in a few weeks, or is there another ace, no pun intended, up Elias' sleeve here?
If I had to guess, I would guess that they're done. But my guesses recently have been pretty bad, so if there's, you know, a place to put money on anything, just bet the opposite of what I say. I was expecting two starting pitching additions coming into this offseason, and they got those two. You know, it wasn't exactly the two that most of the fan base would have loved. They were hoping for a top of the rotation guy. If there's going to be a surprise, it is going to be via trade. I don't expect them to be in the Jack Flaherty market anymore, for example. Expect them to sign, I don't even know who else is out there, Jose Quintana, right? I don't expect that. But if there's a trade partner that they've been having discussions with, because I'm sure they've been talking with the Mariners and these other teams, if there's a team that then comes to the table and really seems like they're willing to deal somebody like a Luis Castillo, somebody like a Mitch Keller, somebody like a Dylan Cease, then yeah, I think they're still in play for that. It might just be more likely that that happens at the trade deadline or midseason if they decide that they need a pitcher like that. They might give themselves a little bit more time before, you know, kind of pulling that trigger, so to speak.
Jacob Cabanmeyer, Baltimore Sun, joining us here. Vinny and Haney, 105.7 The Fan, talking Orioles with you here on this January 14th. Jacob hopefully didn't pick the Steelers and Broncos this weekend, talking about those bad decisions that he makes when he comes to guesses. But Jorge Mateo, he's holding out, or he hasn't come to a deal. He's the lone dissenter, I guess, when it comes to the arbitration process. What's the main holdup here, and could this thing get uglier? Keep it in mind that, you know, he's coming back from a pretty significant elbow injury.
No, I did not. I did not take the Steelers or the Broncos. I haven't been that bad with my predictions. Here's the thing that is important for everybody to remember with arbitration now. In the new CBA, which isn't that new, it's back in 2022, in the CBA agreement, a salary for a major league player who's in arbitration, if you agree to that player, if you avoid arbitration and come to an agreement, that salary for the upcoming season is guaranteed, okay? But if you take the player to arbitration and you force the arbiter, the hearing, to decide what that player's salary is for the season, it does not become guaranteed until opening day. Okay, so just the way I see it, it happened last year with Jacob Webb. Okay, they took Jacob Webb to arbitration, the Orioles did, over something like $100,000, which sounds a lot to, you know, peasants like you and me, but to, you know, Major League Baseball organizations, that's like a penny. Okay, and they did it because, in my view, when I saw that, I said, okay, they're going to see if Jacob Webb is a key part of this team in spring training. He turned out that that was the case, and then they kept put him on the opening day roster, and then his salary became guaranteed. I'm thinking the same thing is going on perhaps with Jorge Mateo, who I think will probably get somewhere between $3 and $3.5 million in that arbitration hearing. He's still dealing with that elbow injury from last season, and so they will go into spring training, see how Cody Mayo looks, see how Jorge Mateo looks, see how Ramon Urias looks, see how everybody looks, and then they make a decision on Mateo, just like they would with anybody else.
Roki Sasaki, he's looking for a home, and according to MLB Network, it's going to be either L.A., San Diego, L.A. Dodgers, of course, or the Blue Jays again. He's an international free agent, and the Orioles helped me out here, Jacob, pushing $7 million in kind of international spending dough. Were they ever an option for him, and where's that money going to go then?
No, listen, I'm not going to say they were never an option. You would like to hope that the Orioles were one of the 20 teams who made a strong pitch to Sasaki and his team. There are aspects of joining this organization that would make sense for a player like Roki Sasaki, but one of the big reasons is geography, and it's just going to be difficult when there are teams on the West Coast, which is, you know, where Japanese players typically prefer to play if they have their choice. And you know, that's, I never really viewed the Orioles as legitimate contenders for Sasaki, and frankly, at no fault of their own. It's just the reality of the business with a player like Sasaki. And I can just say I'm excited to see him pitch in the majors and to see him develop. It'll be really interesting for whatever team gets him. And like most of these free agents, I would be surprised if it was the Blue Jays. They've finished third on a lot of guys this offseason. As you mentioned, the money factor, the fact that the Orioles had as much money basically as anybody else, the money just isn't that much of a factor. I mean, for a player like Sasaki, who is looking at making in the lifetime of his career hundreds of millions of dollars, not just through salary but through endorsements and everything else of a player of his stature can obtain, a few million dollars here and there at this stage in the process doesn't seem to really be a factor for him.
All right, Jacob, how about any injury updates? Because, like, when we got to spring training last year, all of a sudden Elias came out and it was like, whoa.
Yeah, left side of the menu. Yeah.
Is there anybody that, you know, we haven't heard of that you may be hearing that may be having some issues?
No, but I am expecting it. And the reason is, if you look at it, if you try to make the roster, the 26-man roster, which I've done, they have too much pitching, right? And that doesn't mean they have too much great pitching, right? They certainly don't have that. They lost Corbin Burns. They, you know, everybody wants them, and they arguably should still get that top starter. But if you constitute it right now, you make a 5-man rotation, assuming everybody's healthy. Trevor Rogers is in AAA, and maybe he deserves to be there. But I don't think the pitcher he was in the second half is who he's going to be moving forward. And I certainly don't think that they would give up on him after four starts, whether they should or not. You know, that might be sunk cost fallacy, and we might see that early in the season. And so I would be surprised if somebody like Trevor Rogers is in AAA, but if you have a 5-man rotation right now, he's obviously the odd man out. And so is Kate Povich, who pitched great in September for them and was on the playoff roster. And then with Kittredge in the bullpen, you're looking at it, and there's some guys there. You know, Suarez might be in the bullpen, but you're still looking at pitchers who are going to be in AAA that it might surprise you. And so I am, and this is a guess, and I don't have any names or guesses, and it would be uncouth for me to do so, but I'm expecting some injuries because Elias went out and got three pitchers and spent, what, $38 million on them combined, when I think most people looked at this and said, okay, they probably need two pitchers between the rotation and the bullpen. And so with a bunch of young pitchers who dealt with some injuries last year, most teams have somebody who in January they start ramping up, and something that was maybe nagging them at the end of last season they thought would go away with some rest, and it didn't, and it crops back up in January and it actually gets worse. And so I would not be surprised whatsoever if there's some disappointing injury news on the first day of spring training, and then you just got to hope that it's not season ending or it's not something terrible.
So you're saying somebody gets Nancy Kerrigan? No, I'm just joking. Jacob Calvin Meyer from the Baltimore Sun. Appreciate your time as always. Ravens Bills, real quick. Winner is?
Oh, God, put me on the spot. I think it's the Ravens, and I think the Bills, what are the Ravens favored by like 1.5 right now? The score will look closer, but I think the Ravens will control the game for most of it. I think this is their year.
Jacob Calvin Meyer, appreciate the time as always. Enjoy the playoffs, and we'll talk to you before spring training for sure.
Thanks, guys.
There's Jacob Calvin Meyer, Baltimore Sun, Vinny and Haney, 105.7 The Fan. We'll come back, talk more Bills and Ravens, and Vinny's going to break down the defensive line. Buffalo versus Pittsburgh. Ravens have had problems with the Steelers' D-line. Does Buffalo bring that same sort of concern? Buffalo's defensive line going up against Baltimore's offensive line. And Vinny, we heard John Harbaugh praising them. Compare it to Pittsburgh's and why, I won't say it's an easier task, but why on paper it might not be as daunting as, say, the Steelers coming around.
Well, when you look at the Steelers guys, Bob, I mean, let's look at their defensive line. All right, Cameron Hayward to me is a stud. He's all pro. And Cameron Hayward has 71 tackles as a D tackle. And 8 sacks. He had 10 tackles last week. He has 12 tackles for loss, 11 pass defense. Now, Daquan Jones, for number 92, who starts for them, he has 23 tackles, 2.5 sacks. Ed Oliver, who's been their stud type guy, he's got 29 tackles and 3 sacks. So Cameron Hayward is head and shoulders above them. Okunjobi, you know, who the Steelers were like, oh, we get Okunjobi back, blah, blah, blah. He's got 41 tackles, 1.5 sacks. And he's probably better than anybody that they've got. All right, then let's look at the pass rushers, Bob. T.J. Watt, 61 tackles, 11.5 sacks. Gregory Rousseau has 8 sacks. So they don't have anybody even close to that. There are other... Espinoza is, let me see, what's Highsmith? Highsmith has 45 tackles, 6 sacks. Espinoza has 39 tackles, 6 sacks. So fairly comparable there. And Von Miller has 17 tackles, 6 sacks. So he's not really, he comes in the pass.
Yeah, he's a shell of his former
right.
stud self.
Like Herbig, Bob, who caused Ravens problems, he's got 22 tackles. He's got 5.5 sacks. So, I mean, Bob, if it's me, I want Cameron Hayward above anybody Buffalo's got. I want T.J. Watt above anybody's got. I want Highsmith over anybody. And I want Herbig over their third guy. And when you look, looking at Buffalo, they don't have a corner anywhere near Joey Porter Jr., not even close. They don't have, how about their two safeties, Bob, Rapp and Hamlin. Rapp has 82 tackles, and Hamlin has 89. Deshaun Elliott has 108 tackles and an interception. Minkah Fitzpatrick has 96 tackles and an interception. Head and shoulders above Buffalo's. And the Ravens ran up and down the field. And like, okay, you say, well, they're linebackers. Queen had 129 tackles. They got Terrell Bernard has 104 tackles, 2 interceptions. And Dorian Williams, 42, has 117 tackles. And then Matt Milano now, you know, so Milano is probably better than the Steelers' second guy. So when you look at the overall defense, Pittsburgh's defense is a lot better, you know, than Buffalo's defense.
Yeah, and the stats kind of say that.
Yeah,
too.
I know. And, you know, I mean, Bob, and Hayward's 33 years old, but I got a new appreciation for him. I mean, watching the film and studying the film, that dude's a beast. That dude is a beast. And Watt didn't have anything in this, you know, in the games against the Ravens. So, I mean, when you match up against the Ravens, Highsmith caused Ronnie problems. Watt, you know, got a chip. Is there anybody that you feel like you got to know where he is at all times on Buffalo? No, I wouldn't say so. You know,
Well, Teron Johnson didn't play in that first game either, and he's got a couple of picks here in the secondary, and Benford can get to the football too. He's got some ball skills.
Yes. Yeah. But overall, that Pittsburgh defense is a lot better, you know, and I guess they didn't show up last week. I mean, they gave up, but I mean, so did Buffalo. Buffalo gave up 200 yards rushing to
Baltimore.
Derrick Henry. So, you know, you say, okay, they added these guys and everything. That's cool. But, you know, when you look at it too, okay, they added those three. The Ravens added Pierce, Darius Washington, and Malik Harrison. You know, so that look at how much better their defense. I would say that at that time, Bob, the Ravens' defense has improved more than Buffalo's defense from week four to now.
Yeah, and you talked about the stats showing the trend upwards. Yeah. Where Buffalo is good, best in the NFL, turnover differential.
Oh, yes. They are a plus 24. They're number one in the league. But who was number two in the league? Pittsburgh.
So the Ravens going up against the Bills. It's a rematch of that game back in September that the Ravens won handily on national TV. The Ravens are favorite in this game, whether you like it or not. That's the line, according to our friends at ESPN Bet, -1. When we come back, we're going to hear from the Ravens. We're going to hear from the Bills. We're going to hear from McDermott, Josh Allen, talking about the rematch here. The winner gets to the AFC Championship game. If Houston stuns the Kansas City Chiefs on Saturday, the winner of this game, Baltimore-Buffalo, hosts the AFC Championship game. So we'll get into all of that and more. If you want to join us, you can at 410-583-1057. Terps win last night. Went as easy as they thought. Second half, though, Derek Queen took over 77-71 off to Northwestern. We just talked to Jacob Calvin-Meyer about the Orioles, about 5 weeks away from pitchers and catchers and a lot of other things going on. How about that national championship game in football? Monday night, Ohio State, Notre Dame. Hey, you got two historic programs playing for the championship. You know, with all due respect to Boise State and Indiana, I think we're kind of cool with this, right?